Hey everyone, welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for episode 6 of season 6 of The Amazing Race Canada, Heroes Edition. In this episode, the most amazing, unique, and exciting things happened. There was a dance task, there was a product placement task, and a team that started in last place went home in last place. It was nonstop heart-pounding action. Dan Heaton, would you agree?
Yes, and I also learned about something really cool. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called OnStar. It's a service in a car that I think helps out and gives you clues. I'm not sure. It was really, really neat. I really enjoyed that part of it.
I vaguely recall them maybe mentioning it once in passing. If I picked up on it at all, it was not because they were hammering it into our skulls.
Yeah, and this was a leg where I felt like we've talked about this in the past. We mentioned it with the U.S. version, but you have those legs where a team starts out near the end. They don't get on a plane and bunch together. And you see so many clips of the team saying, we've still got a chance. We can still do it. And that was this leg. And I know sometimes the show just can't help that because I don't think they expected last week a team to finish an hour behind all the other teams. So right there, they were kind of stuck. So that hurt them, but I don't want to completely let them off the hook either. It was not that thrilling of a leg overall.
It was such a confluence of things that make a bad leg. You know, not a lot of mixing up in the order, not a lot of exciting tasks. I mean, Toronto is a fantastic city, as we will get into, but not a heart-pounding location on The Amazing Race, especially since they've been there quite a few times at this point. We have to show what happened this leg so that next week when you tune in, you're not like, huh, I thought there was a team of Navy women and one of them had a lot of hair and they're not there anymore. What happened to them? Other than that, you probably skip the entire thing.
I do enjoy the dance task, and we'll get to that later. And I thought that was fun and that helped. However, that does not make a complete leg. And I think it's easy to look at this leg and just think about the audience cheering and people dancing in fun outfits. And, you know, this was fun. And that's good that they did that. However, that was 10 minutes. Great. It's just you look at the whole thing and it's kind of like, you know, I've never been to Toronto. I know it's an amazing city. Show that to me a bit. I'm not saying every task has to be, this is what is Toronto. But I did get the impression this felt a little more like, and this is no offense to Toronto, more like generic big city leg in a way.
I would agree with that 100%. And Toronto, yeah, it's a fantastic city. I can speak from experience. I've been there a couple of times and actually will be traveling there again very soon, planning a vacation there as we speak. But I would say the low point of Amazing Race to me is Amazing Race US season 24, when they went to Malaysia and they kind of stayed inside the entire time in a bar. And it was like, these are okay tasks, but we could be literally anywhere in the world. And that's how I felt for a lot of this. I mean, as much as that looked like a fun club, it looked like a fun coffee shop, I can't think of a single city that does not have these features.
Right. And another factor, too, is you have a food bank, which it was really cool that the show is donating $5,000 to a food bank in Taylor and Courtney's hometown. That is great. And I think you can feel good about that. But again, that on a surface is not enough. They could totally do the food bank and make the task more interesting. And I know we're kind of jumping around, but it's kind of the overall theme, I think, this week. And, you know, you can't hit a home run every week. So I don't mean to be too rough on the show because I feel like this is still a fun group of teams and whatnot. But it seemed like with each one of these tasks, it's like, we could have just pushed a little more, done something a little bit different. It might have helped. Instead, I felt like when I look back at the season, you know, we lost to Now Monica, but we kind of felt like we lost them last week. I mean, even though they weren't eliminated, this week they tried their hardest and I appreciate it. But really, it was just kind of like that march to the end.
Yeah, it was like dead men walking.
Yes. So should we dive in, though? We've mentioned a few of them, but, you know, we should go through each one and kind of talk about some teams did very well and proved that they're very good at tasks and not always the teams we expect.
It's true. I think every team left in it. And I think we got a question to this effect. Would we be totally poleaxed to see one of these teams win, or could all of them plausibly win? And I think the answer is any of these teams have a real shot. And in the last couple of weeks, I would say in particular, I think this is Taylor and Courtney's coming out party, because they were very invisible. They're competent racers. They've never really made any big mistakes that we can see. But the last couple of legs, I feel like they've really emerged as powerhouse teams. I would say they are the ones to beat right now.
I agree. I mean, they've won three legs. Leanna Mar won the other two, but we have seen Leanna Mar struggle at times. And the first leg they won was in a foot race with Todd and Anna. And it felt like, you know, Todd and Anna had a really good shot to win that leg, but they're just destroying everybody. And I mean, I don't want to overstate it, but what I've noticed especially is this has been a season of dance tasks, and we'll talk about that more later. But you have most teams where one of them is good at dancing, like Phil, or even with Adam and Courtney. Adam's really bad at dancing. Those two are really good at dancing, both of them. And not like professionals, they're not Mar, but that has made a huge difference, because every time we've hit that task in most of the last few legs, they have gone in and they've been in the lead and they've just done great. So I don't want to narrow it down to one thing, but they don't really have a weakness. They both seem to be solid at everything. And like we saw last season with the team that we saw this week, being solid at everything is enough to win the show.
Yeah. And I think we drafted Adam and Courtney first in our draft, but I think we thought they were going to be that team that kind of, you know, maybe a little light on personality and a little heavy on racing skills. And maybe we don't see as much of them, but Taylor and Courtney are the ones with that have the Joey and Kelsey upside here.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact is, too, is they're brother and sister and they have a really good relationship. So when they talk to them and they say, "We're having so much fun getting to spend time together," I'm like, "Of course you are. You both like each other. It's great. You know, you're nice people." And they get along with the other teams and they just go about their business, which, again, that's good. But Adam and Courtney, on the other hand, are the team that can't seem to look through an observation tower and that are using a U-turn smartly, but they're kind of bumbling around differently. But to get to your point about all the teams having a shot, that is the one benefit here of losing Zenev and Monica. Nothing against them, but I don't think they weren't going to win the season. So you lose the team that is arguably the weakest of the seven. And now you look at the top six. And yes, there's a pecking order. Yes, there are teams better or worse. But you look at these teams and you're like, this is going to be fun. This is a good top six. This is, you know, we have some cool, fun teams. We have strong teams in different ways. And it could go so many different ways. Yes, I think Taylor and Courtney will probably be in the final three. But I don't know who's going to be there with them, because a lot of different things could happen.
They really do strike me as a particular type. And I don't see a way they're not in the finals, but I'm not sure who else is there. There's a great story that happens on any one of these paths to any combination of these teams in the finals.
Yeah, because you have, I mean, Phil and Martina with just how much they've pulled through, and even Adam and Courtney have a great story. And everyone, I'm not going to go through every team, but they've all had their moments. I mean, I could pick who I thought it was going to be, but I almost feel like, you know, that's a little premature, because we could watch next week and, like, you know, I would be like, no, that's not it at all. It's these other teams. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. So shall we go up to the top of the leg?
Yes, we shall. We are traveling to Toronto,
which is like a 20-minute drive from where they started.
Of course, we will say that this is all part of one leg, one of the longest in Amazing Race Canada history, which, again, I put a big asterisk on that because it is 2 weeks. You know, I know the teams aren't getting the break, but in terms of for us. But so they go to this, they go up to the observation deck at the city hall, have to find a flag. We've seen this task many times. This one didn't seem so hard, though.
Yeah, it really seemed like most of the complication to that was you had to be on the right deck, and there were a couple of different decks. So some people went to the wrong place, and then it was very hard. And they're like, oh, we have to go up these stairs. Oh, it's that giant red and yellow thing that's right in our faces. And if it was a snake, it would have bitten us, as my dad used to say.
Yeah, and I did. There was a point where Taylor was like, "You mean that big sign right there?" Like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was entertaining. And I did enjoy some of the teams. When you hit the second half of a long leg and they've already flown back from Indonesia, teams looking just really confused about like how to look out a window. And I'm not criticizing them, but that made this a little more interesting than it might have been, not because of the difficulty, just because teams just were kind of having a hard time. Not all of them, but, you know, kind of the usual suspects, though. You're like Adam and Courtney, Dylan and Kwame, kind of the usual suspects of the struggling with the simple stuff and doing well at the hard stuff.
That's a really great way of putting it. But to that point, something did occur to me while I was watching the two doofus teams doofusly struggle with everything. And it occurred to me, how much of this do you think is editing and how much is them like genuinely being stumble bums?
I think a lot of it is probably editing, because I even think back, there was a DVD release of like season 7 of the US version, and they had a bunch of extra scenes. And there was one extra scene that was just Rob and Amber lost in a parking lot for like 5 minutes. And I watched this and I'm like, if I saw this, I'd think they're really dumb. And they're not, because that show didn't want to make them look dumb. So my point is that I think you could take footage of any team at some point, especially if you don't have music, and make them, or with the silly music, make them look kind of stupid. Now, granted, there's kind of, we could look at this two different ways, though. We could say this means these teams are going to get eliminated by being that way, or these teams are going to find their way and end up winning or finishing second because they struggled early. And that's the one thing where the editing doesn't telegraph it so much, because you can look at it a different way.
Yeah, that's true. We don't know to what purpose they might be being edited this way. But it did kind of occur to me, they're so jet lagged. They've already had one leg and now they're doing one without any rest period. They probably all had that moment of looking around, not knowing what they're supposed to be looking for, and then suddenly getting it. I think you could make that story be about probably all of them. And they sort of did. It was kind of the case with Taylor and Courtney, but they were so far ahead to begin with that it didn't really matter. And everybody else, I'm sure, kind of looked around for a little while, and you could heighten that, like put the right music behind it and somebody saying, "Where is it? I don't see it." Cut to commercial, come back. "Where is it? I don't see it." Anybody could be doing that. Although I think there is a little grain of truth just based on past performance, how we've seen Adam and Courtney behaving and how we've seen Dylan and Kwame get lost going on a road with no turnoffs and then all of a sudden doing amazing at a task that everybody else struggles with. It's really kind of amazing that they are that bad at certain things and that good at certain things. So it's like everybody always says about reality television, they can't air it if you don't do it.
Right. And with Adam and Courtney, they started the leg in second, barely, but ahead of Martina and Phil, and ended up sixth. So unlike some of these teams where it seemed like they just kind of held serve in a way, they did their struggles there and then further down the road did make a difference. And I mean, granted, some of it was the dancing. But of course, but they, you know, they did struggle a bit. So like you mentioned, Taylor and Courtney might have taken just as long, but when they start that far ahead, we don't see it. You normally don't see the first place team in a leg really, really confused, unless, you know, unless the story is everyone's confused. So I think you're making a good point there. And it says a lot that this is about all we can talk about with this task.
I think we've already spent more time talking about this than the show did airing it. But I will say, to your point, there's one point at which you see Taylor and Courtney confused. And it's when they're driving to the pit stop, because they say they have honestly no idea what place they're in because they haven't seen anybody else in so long. I think that says something about them as well.
Yeah, where they're thinking, well, maybe, because, you know, you go to a detour, there's always the possibility that the other teams all did the coffee. Now, that wasn't very likely, but it could have happened. So I could see them thinking that. And plus, like you mentioned, with what we talked about, teams do get lost. We rarely see it unless it has an impact on the show or they're trying to create tension where there is no tension. And I think in that case, that was sort of it. But there's still truth to it that they didn't know.
Okay, so they went up to the top of a high thing and looked out and found a flag thing. And it directs them to basically the equivalent of Times Square as Dundas Square. It's in the middle of everything. It's in the heart of downtown. There's shops and restaurants and things all around this whole circle. Big signs, bright lights. It's not something out of the way.
Yeah, that was my thought right when I saw it. I wasn't as familiar with it, but I was like, that looks like Times Square, basically. And then I thought, well, that's the most cliche thing to think ever. You know, of course, I haven't been that many places or something. But now that you mention it, I'm like, okay. I feel all right with that. So, yes, we now reach, you know how last week we were talking about the product placement Chevy challenge and the door, and you mentioned it as even basically being possibly the best one ever. How would this one rank for you?
Well, I did sort of enjoy the Tetris aspect of it, where you had to load everything into the car such that you could still see out the rearview mirror. I thought that was pretty clever. But then I think we spoke a little bit about other automotive product placements in years past and highlighted one particular one that we thought was especially egregious and terrible, being the one in the blind date season where everybody had to drive backwards through an obstacle course. And then they, lo and behold, spring that exact thing on us, except it wasn't even in a barn full of Norwegian snow iconography. It was just in the middle of Toronto's Times Square. You can tell this is not a task that they expected to be important to the outcome of the race, because they stacked at the top of the leg in what is possibly one of the most heavy foot traffic areas in all of Canada. So if it was going to be something very important that affected the outcome, it wouldn't put it somewhere where everybody could see them and everybody could immediately spoil it.
Right. And that's a good point, because if that's the case, they'll send, like you mentioned, they'll have people go inside to somewhere that will draw people that they've hired and had signed NDAs or something. But this task, it's not the worst one. Though it's funny that one with the car driving backwards, actually, I think one team ended up getting eliminated because they couldn't drive the car. But beyond that, you know, this is not, let's watch every single team be amazed when you can use your foot. And the Melissa bot brought this up, but I remember this one where you kick the rear end of the Ford and open the door. You know, hey, that's amazing. And we saw every team do it. This is not on that level, I would say, because at least there were some fun moments with the packing where, again, Adam, this is his task. He's going to do it. But also my favorite moment is, of course, Martina, like giving like CPR or reviving this like inflatable doll that they had to put in the car, and basically looked like she was trying to like murder it or something to get it to fit. A lot of pumping herself up a lot and just really fun. That, so the thing is, like you mentioned, if they had just backed that car up, I would have been like, this is the worst thing I've seen, at least on the Canadian version. The fact that they at least had to pack means, okay, it was not great. It seemed awkward and kind of silly to do. But I'd put it in the bottom third of tasks. For the Amazing Race Canada, it's definitely near the bottom, but it was not something so terrible. I know we got some comments that were basically like, just get ready, this is bad news, even before we watched it. It just looked worse compared to last week.
Yeah, it definitely did. I think it raises more questions than it answers, though, that everybody had a blow-up doll among the things they had to put in their car.
Yeah, and also there was something that looked a lot like the Travelocity gnome that they, like, the camera even focused on. And I was like, why is that there? And then nothing ever happened. And I don't know if it was, like, making fun of the U.S. version in some way, which always uses the gnome. But, yeah, not to slide over your original point, I think they just, like, you know, sometimes, like, when they have, like, locals dressed in goofy costumes and you're like, why are those people there? This was on that level, not this leg, but I'm talking about in certain other legs, or, you know, musicians playing or whatever. Felt like they had to liven this up in some way, so they just used inflatable things, I guess.
It could be one of those things, like if you're jet lagged and you've already run an entire leg of the race, you might not realize that you can take the air out of things to make them smaller. Maybe they were banking on that, even though we didn't really see that come to fruition. You did see some people kind of misread the directions in fairly obvious ways, which was entertaining to watch. But on the whole, this was eminently skippable.
Yeah, of course, you know, I even skipped over the unbelievable news at the start of the leg that there was another U-turn. And as they went through this, a small part of me thought, well, maybe, you know, maybe they won't. It'll really be a U-turn. No.
But at least they stacked a couple of things in front of it. So if you really screwed up, you were in a position to get U-turned of your own volition and not just because somebody jumped out of their car faster than you.
That's a good point. And yeah, because even though I mean, and this was really interesting just because, you know, it's W-turn, but that teams didn't want to use it. I don't understand. And I think everyone is trying to like, doesn't want to make enemies. This was not a blind U-turn. People felt like they assumed, I think they were still ahead of Zineb and Monica at least. So I think all the teams kind of thought, we're rolling along. We can do this. Maybe there was just no fear of Zineb and Monica that they would catch up.
Well, I think that's the thing. They all assumed they knew who was going home. And so U-turning anybody except that person doesn't really serve you. If you have a team that's an hour back there, U-turning anybody else is just going to make that team mad at you. So I think everybody made the good call there. There's no reason you don't need it. You're not going to get eliminated. And Adam and Courtney, I think, are a little more understandable here in this instance because they had screwed up a little bit. They were in the back of the pack and they thought, you know, all we have to do is screw up again and we're going to regret not using that U-turn. So that was totally understandable in that moment.
I agree. I think I was glad they used it because, you know, they had the commercial break time where it's like, are they going to do it? Are they not going to do it? And they did. And granted, I think they would have survived, but it would have been a lot closer. Like, because they did leave the dance voguing challenge before Zineb and Monica, but why risk it? I mean, they were sixth. He was the sixth person to start that roadblock. To me, it's like, you know, because you always give the rule that don't U-turn someone you expect to see again. They pretty much knew they were sixth, and they basically knew if they U-turn them, and this is why I think it was hard for them to do, because as we've seen just with our interactions with them, they seem like good people. You know, they're honorable people. So this wasn't just it's the game. They pretty much knew if they did it, they were eliminating a team, which I think made it a little harder for them, but also is why they did it.
Especially in a season with Heroes Edition being writ large all over everything all the time and having all these people that are basically good and decent. And then there's so much stress that is placed on the U-turn, even in a normal season, that it's a dastardly thing to do and that you're screwing over somebody when you're really not. It's part of the game. I think they also anticipated that moment where they show up to the detour, Zineb and Monica roll in, and they won't even talk to them, won't even look at them. I think that's hard to digest, especially when you're thinking of yourself as an upright, honorable, nice person who's basically friends with everybody. And so I have to imagine that was very hard for them in the moment, but it was entirely out of self-preservation. It's obviously not a personal thing. As much as I love a good spite U-turn, this was not that.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get a spite U-turn this season. We'll probably have at least one more U-turn somewhere, probably at the final five, hopefully not at the final four.
The antipathy is non-existent. None of these teams dislike each other. Like, we'll talk about, there's basically two moments of tension this entire episode, one of which we just spoke about, and then something else that will come up later when we get to our questions. But none of these teams, like, there's no tension between anybody at any point. They're all just kind of out there playing a 1970s cooperative game.
Pretty much. And you've seen multiple moments. You even saw it again. You see it almost every week where teams say, do you want to work together? And I'm waiting for a team, because we've seen this in the past, for a team to be like, nope, we're good. And we haven't seen it this season. I'm not that I can remember. And granted, none of those moments have been at the like roadblock right before the pit stop kind of moments or something. But so that might be different as we go forward. But at least right now, it seems like teams realize this is the spirit of the season. We're not going to do it this way. And also when you cast people that in their lives are mostly, well, I wouldn't say mostly, that's mean to who am I leaving out, but that are trying to help people in some way, they're more likely to carry that into the show. And the show likes that. And I guess I should also mention too, they did have to take the subway to this bookstore, which I had first thought, that's pretty cool. You know, that's something different, but that didn't really matter, I guess.
Well, mostly that's because Toronto's subway system is fast and clean and reliable and probably is better than driving around downtown. And we will get to another point about this detour related to the subway. We got a lot of questions to the effect of, why did everybody pick the dance detour over the coffee detour, which turned out to be the slightly easier task? And the dance was very complicated and didn't play to everyone's strengths. Why did everybody just flock to that immediately? And the answer to that lies with Google Maps. If you pull up these three locations, you'll note that we're kind of on the western edge of the downtown area when you get off the subway to go to the bookstore. And then the nightclub is in the neighborhood of Little Italy, which is kind of to the north of the downtown area. And then all the way over on the eastern side of downtown is where the coffee shop is. And so everybody must have looked at that and said, this is like 10 minutes closer. We might as well try it. And it's a straight line to the next one if it turns out to be impossible.
That's a good point. And that's something that the show rarely recognize. Every once in a while you can catch someone talking about it, but I think it explains a lot, because if I was running the race and had a map or had, you know, an understanding at all of the area, that's really important. Because sometimes I think what they will do, the producers, is create one detour, like you mentioned, one detour that's a bit easier, but is, let's say, 40 minutes away, or, you know, this is just hypothetical, and one that's super hard but is right there. And then, why is everyone struggling so much? Same thing. I think that's a part of the show that is hard to convey on TV, though, because you only have 42 minutes. It's hard to have teams, okay, let's spend 3 minutes with teams like borrowing a phone and figuring out where something is. But it sometimes helps explain those head-scratching moments on the show, I think.
Whenever we do get it, it ends up being somebody is looking for one detour and they find the other one. Or they give up on finding one of the detours and just go to the one where they know where it is. But you don't see that calculus happen, probably because it's kind of boring. I think when you're getting a little inside baseball, as we tend to do, it's a little more interesting. But if you're in the moment, it doesn't make a whole bunch of difference to how things turned out in the end. So we might as well just gloss over that whole thing. But if you are wondering why everybody went to that, it's not because they're all super hardcore fans of early 90s Madonna. It's just because that one was closer.
Everyone said, I've always wanted to Vogue in front of an audience. This is great.
Half of these teams were toddlers when that song came out. In fact, all of these teams were, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Dylan and Kwame, I think one of them is a bit older, but older, I'm saying like 32 or something. You know, I'm not, Nancy would be aware of it, but might have been, you know, I don't know. I mean, she was very good, though.
So sure. Maybe, Nancy and Martina would have been the only ones that there's an outside chance they might have vogued before in their lives.
Nancy is like, you know, I guess maybe it's, she is a barrel racer and such, but just seems to just kill these dance tasks. So yeah, I mean, if we look at it, everyone went except for, you know, Phil and Martina are the only ones that, and they, it's interesting to note this, because you do seem to have one team that always seems to take the other detour option each season, and they are that team. And for good reason, because I feel like their skills are sometimes different, and they weren't amazing at the coffee, but it does seem like sometimes the idea, like there's that idea that teams want to go with all the other teams. You can see everyone, but they seem to, not purposely so, all end up by themselves a lot of the time.
That just shows that they are aware that their strengths are different. Like, obviously, their weaknesses are going to be where other people's strengths are, but they've been very, very good at identifying what they might be good at that other people are not. And I've really enjoyed seeing that about them. And it's frequent that we get a team that does that, but we almost never get one that does it this well, this hard all the time. And I've really enjoyed watching them like pick out the one thing that nobody else seems to want to do and then go and rock it, which they did. And arguably this latte foam task was kind of BS, but they seemed very competent at it. I mean, I would let them make me a cup of coffee.
Is this on the level with last time when the idea that everyone in that town is just so into paddle boats? Is this another case where everyone in Toronto loves art lattes? This is nowhere else. Is that the situation again?
Yeah, it was just like everybody in Kuala Lumpur is into nightlife.
They're into sky bar and crazy bartenders. Yeah, so Phil does not drink coffee at all. Bombshell there. So, but again, drinking coffee, that's not really the task. So it probably doesn't matter. I drink a lot of coffee. I don't think I'd be better at that. But yeah, so really, I don't have that much to say on that one. I feel like with Sinam and Monica, they were pretty lax on the judging. But by that point, I'm thinking the show may have been like, don't worry about it. They're not going to catch up. But beyond that, I mean, Phil and Martina were great. And that's about it.
Yeah, I think we can kind of pour that one down the sink and go back to the voguing. Although I don't really have that much to say about the voguing either. It was fun to see everybody put on a silly outfit and learn a dance routine, but there have been so many dance routines this season. There's literally been a dance routine every single leg, and they are fun to watch. They are challenging. I understand why they keep going back to that well, but come on. Toronto's the largest city in Canada. There's got to be at least one other thing they could have done.
Yeah, and that's the thing, because I think a little bit, when I saw this at first, I kind of thought of the season where they did Shine a Light, where they sang the song and how great of a task that was and being just so pumped by that. And I saw this club and I'm like, this kind of feels like that. But I think it didn't, because this is a case where on its own merits, I found this to be really fun. But coming after the Can-Can and, oh my gosh, I can't even remember all of them. The other dance tasks they did. Oh, the hand dance. That was another one. It's a little, and the sword fighting, but it's a little less that way. I liked the energy of the club. I thought it was cool in a lot of ways. But for talking about it on a podcast, I think we would just both be saying that was fun. It was fun. And I did like Adam Tu's, like, what have we done when they walked in to see that? But the main thing is the costumes and dancing is nice. But is that enough for a task on this show when it's arguably still the most exciting task in the leg? That's not a great sign.
This would have been the weakest task in any other leg. So that says something about this leg, I think. And I think it bears mentioning that Madonna didn't invent voguing. We're just kind of glossing over all of it because you guys don't need a lesson in early 90s pop culture. But I have to wonder if they played the song or if they just had that same public domain trancey beat that they were playing over it for the air.
That's interesting. Probably not. Because then you'd see people singing along and then it'd be like, wait, that doesn't work. That's not how it goes. But I did want to point out, of course, that Leanne and Mar were awesome at this. I mean, Mar again walked up to this like, oh, you guys got to be kidding me. You're just going to hand me the $250,000 if we keep this up. But they didn't end up finishing that high, but they were second coming out of that. And it's almost, in its funny way, by having all these dance tasks, there's a reason, and I don't mean to simplify things, but I mentioned Nancy's very good at this. Taylor and Courtney are very good. Leanne and Mar are very good. It is no coincidence these teams are finishing near the top every week. It's not just the fact that there are dance tasks, but teams like Adam and Courtney have really had a rough go because of the dancing. And I don't think we're going to have a dance test every week. Well, maybe.
We might.
We are. I would assume we won't, maybe, or it'll be a detour they can skip. But it's been interesting to see how teams that are really good dancers have done extremely well so far.
Yeah, it's rewarding a particular set of skills over many other skills that in any other season would be rewarded a little more heavily. And I think maybe that's accounting for a lot of why Adam and Courtney are not a stronger team. It's just because they dance like white people.
Especially Adam. Yeah. I think, I mean, she's not a great dancer, but she seems like, you know, she's hanging in there. She's probably as good a dancer as the other Courtney. But when she's next to him, it's just like, oh, and granted, for me, if I was on the show, this season will be the worst season for me to be on ever. I mean, I would just be like, okay, let's go pack the jellies. Now let's go do the coffee. Everyone, we'd be like the Phil and Martina. But Phil's a very good dancer, so I don't even put myself there. But yeah, that's about it. I mean, we do have another task to get to. Is there anything more before we go hang out with a lot of bread?
I think we need to go straight to the bread. Need to get our carb on here. And here's another product placement task, albeit one that makes a slight amount more sense. I guess good on this bread company for donating a lot of things to the North York Harvest Food Bank, but there's not a lot to be said about this one either, apart from I think we have to touch on Leanne and Mar not knowing what a package of bread is.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, I just think of how much bread they would have had by the end of that, because they figured it out and they're like, there's not going to be enough bread here for everyone. But they were thinking like 16 boxes of one or 20. This is definitely, that is a killer fatigue moment if we ever saw it. There was a small mistake by Dylan and Kwame at the end, but this was like, this was the watching at home going, what were we doing? Were we even awake kind of thing? And it did affect their placement. I mean, like I said, they came out second and were passed by, I believe, I mean, by Nancy and Melissa and Martina and Phil, who both finished ahead of them. And granted, it did not put them in huge jeopardy. But again, we've seen a few cracks in kind of their great racing from early in the season, and they're still a very tough team. It just makes me wonder too, like we talked about earlier with the editing, what is that setting us up for? I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I guess so. But if you're going to make a mistake that big, this is the leg to make it on. I think that's part of the reason you didn't see them freaking out too hard about it when they realized what a dumb thing they'd done. And it's still not all the way down there with Are You a Candelabra, which is my all-time favorite dumb thing somebody's done on The Amazing Race. But it was rough to watch. It was kind of great when they figured out what they had done wrong and it was fixable and they were able to get past it. And in any other leg, that might have knocked them out.
Right. And they still finished fourth. I mean, they still were ahead of, you know, three out of the seven teams and way ahead of Zeynep and Monica, which is, again, a testament to how they did the rest of the leg. But it also, like you said, it's just limited stakes. But that's about it, because beyond that, I felt like there was a lot of close-ups of bagels. You know, a lot of like very nice close-ups of bread. And then you have stuff like where you have the guy going, the order is correct. It's like, okay, great. And granted, again, maybe this is exciting if you have two teams fighting it out for last. They're both there. They're both counting their order.
They both reach for the same package of cinnamon raisin French toast bagels.
But the odds are pretty low, even if that was the case. I mean, this just packet. They're packing bread. I don't know. That's the thing. The car task on its own. Okay. If you have another task here that is really good, we might even say this is a really good leg. If there was a fourth task here that was strong, because you already had gone through the car thing, coming to this when they say, and now the Friends of Dempster, even though it's going for a good cause, my whole heart just goes, oh. So it's not terrible. This is not the worst leg of the Amazing Race Canada. Not the worst leg I've seen of many iterations. It's just a little disappointing overall to see kind of where we ended up.
Yeah, it was. It was just really by the numbers tasks. And I think some of these tasks might have been marginally more fun to do than they were to watch. But I don't even think that's true. I don't think they were all that much fun to do either.
Yeah. And I don't know if the show was kind of on the second half of a super leg, didn't really want to totally mess with them or something, but it's hard to know. When they plan it, though, they don't know what's going to happen. So I don't want to put too much emphasis on that, because part of it, like we talked about at the beginning, was just Zeynep and Monica being too far behind. But we got to the pit stop and there was a team we knew. Martina couldn't believe it.
The entire time that they showed Sam and Paul there on the mat, I thought, what happens if nobody knows who they are? And indeed, it did seem a couple of times. They're just like, oh, hello, roguishly handsome dudes in polar fleece standing next to John. Thanks for welcoming us to the mat. I'm like, someone has to know who they are. Please, God, let someone roll up to the mat and be genuinely excited to see them. And thankfully, Martina is the answer to my prayers this season in more ways than one.
Yeah, I just loved her reaction so much. She was like, you're real. I don't know. I don't even understand it, really. But it's great, because it's just like, I think a few other teams probably did, but just didn't have a big enough reaction. But you're right. We even saw, I think there was an article that came out that someone said they'd never seen the show before. And then they watched some of it. But it wouldn't be, yes, they might realize, oh, yeah, this is the team. But they wouldn't have it. I mean, it was not as bad as Kevin and Drew from Amazing Race season one giving out the hot dogs to the family season. And I don't think anybody, barely, from what I remember, I have not rewatched the family edition anytime recently, anyone noticed. So this was none that way. One thing that too about Sam and Paul, I see him and I'm like, yep, they seem like really nice guys. They're really genuine.
I don't remember a single thing they did last summer.
But yeah, and I just, even what they were saying on the map was like at the end, they were pumping up Zeynep and Monica. I was like, that's really nice. These are cool guys. But, I don't know. I don't want to be mean to them, because they seem like nice guys and they were good racers and I enjoyed having them on the show. I like when the show does sometimes reference past seasons or even have past racers. I wish they sometimes did more of things like this. So it's cool. It's just, I was kind of struck by exactly what you mentioned.
I like the precedent, and it would be cool if every season of Amazing Race Canada from here on out honored the previous winners in some way. Like they're just the greeters at some point, or we have an all-star season and all of the greeters are previous teams that aren't cast for all-stars. That could be fun too. I like it that this show acknowledges that they're not the first season of it, which Amazing Race US very frequently pretends it has no history.
Yeah, it's much rarer on that end. And I like your idea about the All-Stars. I don't think they would do it because they could see some team like giving out a clue and being like, we're better than you. We should be on the show.
Or like the time that they were in Argentina on Amazing Race All-Stars and they had to open letters from previous teams that they had raced with. And Robin Amber, like, I literally do not remember these people at all.
Some of those letters were just very heartwarming. And then other ones like that, I was like, this is really landing with a big thud. I don't know. That whole season is so weird. I don't know how to explain it. But yeah, and I hope the Amazing Race Canada can do an All-Star season better than the U.S. version.
It would be hard to do one worse.
Which it's bad because, I mean, 11 is not the worst season in the U.S., but it's not the best either. It's kind of in a weird middle zone. But before we lose all of our Canadian listeners that don't need to hear our rankings of the season, should we get into questions?
Let's go right in because we got some really great ones this week. I think are things that we probably should have been talking about all along. So we got one from Sherry who asks, do you think that Dylan and Kwame really are leeching off of Melissa's team? We've heard this accusation in two episodes already. It seems like the guys were not even coming from the same direction when accused of it this episode.
I think this is just a carryover from last week. I think last week, Melissa and Nancy were really, they did follow them a bit. And understandably so, they did not love it. But I don't get the impression, because we've seen teams that seem to just, their strategy is pick a strong team and follow them. I don't see that with Dylan and Kwame, though honestly, that might be a good strategy for them when they're trying to navigate to just follow someone else. So I wouldn't call them leeches. If they did that, given their navigational troubles, I'd say that's pretty smart. I don't know.
If they're that self-aware and they're going to find ways to compensate for the fact that they suck at navigating, there are worse things they could do. But it was something that we didn't really talk about in last week's podcast that I thought it was really important to touch on this week, because it does seem like it's very out of character for everything else that's happening this season that they are going out of their way to mention this leeching thing and call it out when it looks like it's basically nothing. And it's like, that's all you've got. Like, that's all the drama you can muster up in this season. You guys really are heroes.
Well, it's funny that, again, this involves Nancy and Melissa. You know, it came up when Nancy was a little bit excited about using the U-turn and people are like, is she diabolical? And then it's like, are they going to have a blow up? Really? They're a nice team. So it's just interesting that, like you mentioned, it is more about how this season has gone and how they at least seem to be a little more willing to talk smack about other teams, which I don't get the impression most of the other teams are. And if the, I mean, maybe they are, and we're just not seeing it, but there's so many interesting questions about the editing that is going to be explained in the next like 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, once we know how this all shakes out, it's like one of those sixth sense things where we're going to have to go back and watch it all again to see what is really going on.
Yes, because this is one of those cases where because there's six teams that we think have a shot, it even creates so many more alternate universes and possibilities about what could have happened 3 months ago or whenever this was actually shot. So I wanted to give ourselves a little pat on the back when John, we have not mentioned this yet. This was brought up by several people, A Tribe of One on Twitter and Sandra Connolly on Facebook. John did say rip and read for everyone. And most of them were very unconvincing. I know why they didn't show it last week. I'm still amazed they showed it this week because it was just like rip and read. And I was like, man, John, couldn't they have done a second take at this point? But we're going to track this. Do you think, here's my question for you, will we hear rip and read again this season?
I guess there's two separate questions here. The questions are, do we think he said it more or do we think we're going to hear it more? Because I tell you 150%, he definitely said it a bunch more times, possibly every single instance of ripping that he witnessed, which maybe not that many because people don't typically open clues in front of John. So there's that. But I think as long as somebody rips a clue in front of him, we are going to hear it again.
I had this funny image because, you know, the U.S. version has done this thing where Phil is on the course.
Yes,
and I could see Phil running up to the tee being like, rip and read when they're in the middle of the course. That to me would be very entertaining. But yeah, I think there's a good chance we'll see one more super leg. And I think that maybe at the final four, that would be his opportunity when, again, teams have to continue. We may not, but the show tends to like the super legs better than the speed bump, not eliminations, the Canadian version. So I think it's a good likelihood if we do, we'll probably see it. All right. So that now that we've resolved that question, The most important one everyone wanted to know.
Yes. Well, the second most important one that everyone wanted to know, I think we can go into this because many of the questions we got, like I would say even an overwhelming majority of the questions we got this week were how many dance tasks is too many? And also how many Chevy tasks is too many? And then we got a variation on this. Derek on Twitter says final memory challenge. All the dances are all the Chevys. And then Jeffrey K on Twitter said this season is turning into the drive your Chevy to a dance edition. So what do you think, Dan? What bugs you more, the dances or the Chevys?
That's a tricky question because I even tweeted this, that you put people in funny costumes, bring in an audience and have them dance. I tend to be like, hey, that's great. So part of me is like, keep the dances coming, but maybe take a week off. That's what I would think about the dances. The Chevys, I have mixed feelings because Chevy's sponsorship is very important to the show continuing. So my thought is, if that's what it takes for us to just keep getting more seasons of this show, okay. Would I like it to be a little less blatant and more interesting? Yes. In terms of the final challenge, though, I think I can picture all the Chevy cars they did all season lined up, and then they have cards, and then they have to put the car next to where each location, and then they add some dummies where they didn't even go, or they maybe even put a few Chevy cars that they didn't use. That to me seems more likely than some sort of here's all the dances. I cannot figure out how that would work as a memory challenge.
Yeah, especially since most of the dances were on a detour to save poor Phil and Martina from having to do any dances. But I think I got a better one here. I think, well, I have two great ideas, and Amazing Race Canada can feel free to use either of these. But I think the final memory task should be a parking lot with every Chevy and some decoy Chevys. And then you have to park your Chevy on each of the correct locations. So you're not moving a card onto a Chevy. You're moving the Chevy onto the card. I think that gives you some scale and scope that is missing from a final memory task frequently. And I think that makes it a lot more fun to watch and potentially takes you longer to put it all together. So that's thing number one. Thing number two, for Amazing Race Canada Season 7, you should really think about getting Capizio Dancewear on board as a sponsor. So then you can be raking in some sponsor money on all these dance tasks.
First of all, your first idea is brilliant because I can even picture it. You have two teams that are really close and they're trying to park faster and they make them park in a certain space. And there's so many variations on that would be interesting. Now, granted, you got to bring in all the cars. That's not the cheapest thing, but I think it's a great idea. And yeah, if they're going to keep doing these dances, why not? I mean, they've got Woods, they've got Dempsters. We've always commented that they like the dance tasks a lot, but they especially, it seems like every season they do more. So, I mean, we're coming up on Lake 7. And I think, Dan, if you count the sword fighting, this will be dance task next week. I'll be dance task number 5, I think. And I may even be forgetting one. So given that fact, why not? Why not go that way with the sponsorship?
If they want to send me a bunch of free dancewear as thanks for this brilliant idea, I won't turn it down, but I have no idea what I would do with it because I'd probably be the only person on the planet that would be worse than you at the dance tasks.
That would be tough. It's hard to believe, but I'll take your word for it on that. So let me see here. Jeffrey K also pointed out, he asked the question, was telling the all-Canadian racers and all-Canadian audience that Toronto is Canada's largest city the most superfluous information ever provided?
Well, I responded to him directly on Twitter because the first thing that came to my mind was Phil telling everybody that Italy is shaped like a boot.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was fine. I mean, it's no different, I guess, than him saying, like, you know, Ottawa is the capital or something, you know, which of course they people know that, but it's just kind of an easy way to lead into it and remind us, I guess, but it did seem a little on the nose, I guess. So
you can't get too esoteric with those things either, because then that kind of hangs a lampshade on it as well. Like, you can't go in and be like, Toronto is Canada's number one producer of decorative floor lamps or something stupid like that.
Yeah, because then it just comes off like they're trying too hard. Yeah. It's almost better just to be the most direct. This is Toronto. It's a great city. It's very diverse. It is, you know, the largest city. It has a lot of cool things. Let's do it. Nah, that's fine. You know, but that was good that he pointed that out. So do you have other questions that you want to hear?
Well, there's a lot of things we've touched on, but I think it bears talking a little bit more. James Ong on Twitter said, "We're now past the halfway point, so you two must surely have a definitive explanation for why the number one drafted team, Adam and Courtney, are underperforming. By the way, I think they could actually still win." And I think Dan and I are totally with you on this, James. I think they could still win too, but I want to spend a little more time on them because they are a really interesting case.
Yeah. And I think, well, one, I picked them, so you know they were in trouble right from the start. But beyond my jinxing in the past, you look at them on paper and they have their moments. They still are really strong. But I think there's two things. I mean, the biggest thing, like we've mentioned, is that they're just, the tasks just aren't really suited for what they seem to be good at. Like, they don't seem to have a big problem overall with navigating. He's very strong. She seems strong too. Certain types of tasks they do okay. But when you're talking about, like, you know, even last week we talked about how he did something really smart with the candies. And so they don't seem like they get killed by mental tasks. But it's just this season, we talked about it earlier, it's not playing to their strengths at all. Now, what I think I agree with James is, I think they're really resilient, and I think they've been presented that way. And they found a way, like with the U-turn, to survive. They're a team that could have easily gone home a few times if they had made one more little mistake. So I think that's a better chance to win. But getting a little bit to what we saw in them, I just think we had so little information at the start that on paper, even now, they still look like a favorite. But if you look at standings and results, they would be number six on the power rankings, probably.
Yeah, I think it's 100% that this is the Dance and Chevy season. And in any other season, they'd probably be much higher up in our power rankings.
Yeah, I mean, there have been a lot of tests that he said he was very good at. I mean, he loves to pack up his truck, so that he should have been great. And he wasn't terrible at back of the car. He seemed to do a good job. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those cases, though, where thus far it's been that way. Maybe Courtney or Adam are great at magic tricks next week. I don't know. Maybe we were finding what they're good at.
Darts.
Or he's great at darts, and then they'll just get to the face-off and just blast past people. I mean, that dance task we see might be a detour. And if by now I would think, because I think this week, for example, they would have been better at the coffee. Because in general, they seem to be good at those types of tasks. Now, they didn't know that. Like we said, they probably went to the closest place. But part of it, too, could just be they're not picking the right things. Or they've even had bad luck with who does what roadblock. It's just kind of a lot of things have gone against them. But the fact that they're still on the board means who knows.
Here's a really odd comparison to an Amazing Race U.S. team from days gone by. But the only racer I can think of who has said this many times, "Oh, I'm going to be great at this because I did this one weird thing," would be Ron of Ron and Christina from season 12, who every single time they rolled up to a task, he had done it for a living for a while. Like, every single thing was reverse five hole for him.
It's interesting. The slight difference is that Ron was kind of presented, especially the first time, as this really overbearing parent who, that changed. They had the redemption arc, and by the end, it was very positive, but was kind of presented as a know-it-all, like a guy, like, you know, more as like wanted to generate the eye rolls. So far with Adam, and I'm probably biased here, it seems more like I just laugh and I'm like, well, now that's not going to work. There seems to be a slight difference to it. And a lot of that could be editing. It might not be how they approached it. I think it is, though. It's a little more like, you know, he's almost trying to pump himself up. Adam is like, I can do this, because they haven't finished very high. And with Ron, I felt like he's a guy who had a lot of success that really did feel like I can do this, and sometimes could, but other times not so much.
Yeah, it's like a spectrum. On one end, you have Ron being like, I can do this because I'm the best at everything, and just sort of presenting it as matter of fact. And then somewhere like off to the right of that, you have Adam saying, I've done this all the time back home, so it shouldn't be a problem for me. And then on the far, far end of that, you have Martina saying, you can do this, Martina. You've got it. Go, Martina. So I think that's all one continuous spectrum.
Yeah, and Martina just, like, you know, they show her after she parks, like, nailed it. I was just like, nice. I don't know. I enjoyed that.
Martina is my number one favorite thing about this season. I want her to have a spinoff. Like, I want her to host next season if John can't do it for some reason.
What I enjoy about it, too, is that, I mean, she's the dominant character of them, but Phil's not, like, boring. I mean, he's, you know, more quiet and reserved, but I feel like they work well together, and it makes her even funnier when they're together, which I like, because we've talked about this plenty of seasons. You have other times when it's not even close to being balanced. She's so funny and just has such great energy. But he's all right, you know, so I like it. It makes it better.
Yes, indeed. All right. So do we have any other questions we need to tackle?
I mean, we had some kind of lighter questions like, you know, would the teams get hired as baristas by Ruth Abraham? And the answer is no. That is definitely the answer. Are we into voguing? No. So that was Kenneth on Twitter. So, you know, I appreciate that we got so many fun questions like those, because I don't want to just answer, can you analyze and give your power rankings or what do they do? Sometimes just the goofy questions are enjoyable. So I like the balance, and you guys are all asking great questions.
I also like the multitude of people saying that the task judge at the voguing looked like Bryce Isaiah.
Which, you know, Bryce always deserves more mentions than RHAP. So that, and, you know, we even got some videos, you know, to compare. So I will say the listeners this season, in terms of just social media in general, but questions, I don't think we've had a better run of great questions and fun from listeners than we've had this season.
Yeah. Please keep up the good work. And so, speaking of keeping up the good work, I think it's time for us to go into our favorite recurring weekly segment, the Kiss Count.
Yes, and I did see one kiss this week, but did we get the tally? Do we have it?
We have one kiss and seven babes.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, there was a lot of babes.
So how many did we have last week? Do we have that in front of us now?
Yes, because I have that in front of us last week. I tweeted it out, and then I'm going to find... Yeah, because what happened, we threw everybody off by taping a day early. Yeah, so let's see. We were at 14 and 28 last week, so that puts us at 15 and 35.
Wow, I'm feeling really good about my kiss count choice. But the babe count, I think I'm okay. But if they have a really rough week, they could reel off 20 in one week with the babe count. So
conversely, if they had a really great week, they might end up getting 20 kisses in a leg.
Which would change everything. But I'm glad, though, that, you know, that they've been able to survive. Like we talked about, the worst thing would be them getting eliminated with a very low number up there. So it's great that for a lot of reasons that they're around. So, and I love the fact that we don't have to count ourselves.
Yeah. Thank you once again to Karen for taking care of that for us. It's really a load off, and it's very, very helpful. And we're sorry we threw you off last week. So to remind everybody, the reason that we spend so much time talking about the kiss count and the babe count is that we are actually sponsoring a contest this season, and you can get involved by making a contribution of $10 Canadian or more to the Canadian charitable organization of your choice, forwarding the receipt to me at jess@robhaswebsite.com. And at the end of the season, we're going to take all of these receipts, we're going to throw them in a hat and pick one, and the lucky winner will receive a Rob Has Podcast buff, which is very exciting. It's a good quality buff. I have one myself. And the other part of the kiss count bet is that at the end of the season, Dan and I have had a bet going, and whoever is the closest to the total number of kisses on the season, and it's clearly going to be Dan, the loser will make a large contribution to the Canadian charity of his or her choice. And so I'm looking forward to putting my money where my mouth is on that one. And if the number's really low, I'll up it because I'm not a jerk. So anybody looking for details on all of the stuff I just said can just go to robhaswebsite.com/kisscount, and it's all written there for you. And we've gotten a lot of people forwarding the receipts to me, and I'm excited that the pool's pretty big. So that doesn't mean you shouldn't keep doing it. The odds of winning are still pretty great. And so we hope that you'll help us out and be true Canadian heroes by giving back. So all of that, we also love hearing feedback. I can't imagine you guys don't realize this by now with our glowing discussion of all of the great feedback that we got this episode. For what was really not a great episode, the feedback was fantastic. And so please continue to weigh in on what you liked and didn't like about the episode, about Amazing Race in general, about our show. We love to hear from you. So the easiest way to do that, you can leave a comment on the thread for this episode at robiswebsite.com. You can also rate and review us in the iTunes store. That helps boost our visibility and increases the pool of great potential feedbackers. And of course, everyone's favorite is the Twitter. And you can reach me on Twitter at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton. And thanks a lot. It's been a blast this whole season, even with the episode the way it was. It's been great.
Even on the great episodes, your weighing in makes it so much better. The community that's really sprung up around this podcast and around Rob Has a Podcast in general is just such a fantastic bunch of people that make watching this stuff so much more enjoyable. So we just want to say we appreciate all of you. Another way you can give back if you feel so inclined is to become a patron of Rob Has a Podcast, which you can do by going to robhasawebsite.com/Patreon. And supporters of the podcast get a lot of extra perks. You can receive swag. You can participate in our Facebook group. There's a lot of great rewards for participating in that. And we highly encourage you to do that as well. So all of that. I want to thank everybody once again. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. Thanks for Rob for letting us continue to do this craziness. Thanks to Dan for being a consummate co-host, and we'll see you all next week.